have a friend who just doesn't give gifts. It's just not something they do. They don't get much value out of gifts. They feel burdened by it. Now, I, on the other hand, love to give gifts. It's not the monetary value of the gift that I care about. I often find inexpensive or handmade gifts very meaningful. I love a handwritten note or card. I love the thrill of finding the perfect gift for someone I care about. But for my friend, when I show up at their house with a bag full of gifts for the whole family, they feel stress. It's probably like, oh man, now I have to reciprocate this whole thing. In my way of thinking, I'm showing my love and care for them, and in their way of thinking, I just place this additional workload on their shoulders. Which one of us is right? Both? Neither? It's not a matter of right and wrong, it's instead a matter of preference and personality. The author, Dr. Gary Chapman, has become famous for his relationship books and quizzes, The Five Love Languages, which Dee just talked about. He asserts that each of us has one of five primary love language, or a way of giving and receiving love, and we have a mismatch with someone if our love languages are different from each other. Often, Chapman says, we can give and receive love, we are capable of giving and receiving love in any of the five languages, but the ones that matter the most to us are our top one or two. You can take a quiz online and find out what yours are, or just by describing them to you, you could probably guess what yours will be. So if we need to receive love in one language, and our partner or friend keeps showing us love in a different language, then we're going to have a mismatch, and we're just not going to feel the full effects of their love, even if they show it and show it and show it and show it. His five love languages are these, and they can also be summarized in this funny meme that I found online about burritos. So here they are. Number one is words of affirmation. This is saying how much we love and appreciate the other person. Saying I love you or giving compliments is a good way to show love to someone whose primary love language is words of affirmation. Or as the burrito meme says, this is a really good burrito. Number two, acts of service or doing nice things for the person. This is my top love language, number one for me. When my husband helps around the house or does something to make my life easier or better, which he does a lot, I feel personally loved by that. Or, I made you a burrito, is one way to say that. Three, receiving gifts is another love language. This might be actual presents or flowers, love notes, something tangible like that. Those visible tokens of love can make someone feel really loved if this is their primary love language. Here's a burrito, is how you would do that. Number four, quality time. If someone's primary love language is quality time, gifts or words might not mean nearly as much to this person as spending time together, face to face, or doing something that you both have in common. As the meme says, let's go get some burritos together. The fifth love language is physical touch. Hugs, kisses, holding hands, a back rub, an arm around the shoulder. These all might be ways someone feels love if this is their love language. Or arms around the person wrapped in a warm hug like a burrito. So you can see now that there are these different ways of giving and receiving love, but if there's a mismatch, you might not get it, right? If your primary love language is quality time and someone just keeps buying you presents over and over and over again and never spends any time with you, you're not going to feel that loved, right? So this isn't rocket science. For my friend, I could buy them gifts all day long, but what they want is affirmation, words of affirmation. For someone who loves words of affirmation, if you give them lots of hugs and back rubs and kisses, they might just not get the message, as well as if you just simply and clearly said to them, I just love you so much. That would work for someone whose love language is words of affirmation. So now that I've explained all this to you, I'm going to be honest and say that I don't totally love Chapman's work. I don't recommend his books. He leans heavily on pop psychology. He has an overly heteronormative way of viewing romantic relationships. And he occasionally veers into territory that can feel a little bit like he's excusing abusive behavior because the partner didn't show their love the right way. No. Hell no. But don't read the books. Don't give him any money. Generally speaking, the idea of love languages usually hangs pretty well together. If you know the burrito meme, that's all you really need to know. So if you have some sense of your own primary love language or languages, it's important. It's nice to be able to say to someone, here's what I need from you. I love when you do this or this. It's also nice to discuss with people that you love, whether they are your romantic partners or your family, your children, your parents, your friends. But the trick with love languages is that you have to de-center yourself and your own wants and your own needs in order to show love better to the person that you want to receive it. I want to buy gifts for my friend. I love buying gifts. But it won't mean as much to them. And I really, really want them to receive my love. I want that more than I want to buy gifts. Many of the world's religions have a rule that has come to be known as the golden rule. The Christian scriptures say it like this: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The Jewish scholar Hillel summarized the entire Torah as whatever is hateful and distasteful to you, do not do to your fellow man. The Islamic tradition states in the Quran, pay, O children of Adam, as you would love to be paid, and be just as you would love to have justice. Many other religions and philosophical traditions have their own versions of this same rule. And it's a really great start to morality and to right relationship. If you wouldn't like it, don't do it to other people. The golden rule requires empathy. It requires that you put yourself in someone else's shoes. Now, I have a 3.5-year-old at home, and I'm constantly saying to him, I don't like that. Would you like it if I did that to you? Don't pull the dog's ears. You wouldn't like it if someone pulled your ears. Golden rule. Perfect for 3.5-year-olds and everyone else. But most of the time with basic stuff, this rule holds water. People have basic needs in common across the world. People want safety. They want love. People want respect and joy, connection. Understanding that we should extend those things to everyone is, of course, a good start in helping us treat each other with worth and dignity, as our first Unitarian Universalist principle challenges us to do. But the problem is that not everyone has the same idea of what these things look like. Not everyone agrees about what results in love, respect, or connection. Often these differences are just from our personality, from our upbringing, or from our culture. So here's a simple poll. Were you taught to make eye contact with your elders when you were a child as a sign of respect? Raise your hand if you were taught to make eye contact. Now, raise your hand if you were taught to not make eye contact as a sign of respect. Anyone? A few folks? Yeah, this is a cultural difference. And when someone from a non-dominant culture, in this case, folks who were taught to not make eye contact, are taught that it is respectful to avert your eyes from your elders, then they go to school and the teacher says, look at me when you're talking to me. Right? That's a difference. They both want to show respect, golden rule, but they're just not sure how to do it for the other person. The golden rule says, I want respect, so I will show you respect. But it assumes that you want to show respect in the same way that you would want them to show it. And that's just not always true. There's not always a match there. Do unto others the way you would want to be treated. That's the golden rule. But the platinum rule goes one step further. Do unto others the way they want to be done unto. So you've probably heard the saying, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. The platinum rule says, when in the presence of someone else, do to them as they would want you to do. It's the when in Rome rule, just for everybody. In the Wonderbox time, I talked about my friend when I was little who got me that great gift. At least it would have been great if she and I had had the same preferences in toys. I imagine her in the store with her mom, and she saw that fancy Barbie doll, and she thought, I would love this if someone got me this. I will have my mom get this for Christina. And that is a really loving intention. But the problem was I just couldn't have cared less about Barbies, and I really wanted pretend food. I was honestly really disappointed by that gift, but I said thank you. I appreciated the intent. But the impact was that I just didn't feel very understood or loved by that present. But in the grand scheme of things, I mostly felt loved by this friend, so I was able to kind of let it go. But in that reading that we heard earlier, Reverend Cooley talked about microaggressions, the bruises that never heal. Microaggressions are not hateful, usually. They're not usually overtly racist or sexist or whatever. They're usually comments that the person saying them doesn't think they're bad at all. I've been told during my career, probably more times than I can count, that I'm a really good preacher for such a young woman. I mean, thanks? I mean, the person saying that comment thinks they're giving me a compliment. That is their intent, right? But what I hear is young people and women are inherently not capable of saying wise things. So I'm surprised that you're not half bad at it. Now, there's a difference there between the intent and the impact. Now, most of the time, I don't get comments like that, so I'm usually able to sort of hear the intent and let go of the impact. But when a white person says, I just love your hair, it is so unique, to a black person wearing a natural afro, the intent is a compliment. But the impact is yet another white person making a big deal about the totally natural, normal way hair grows out of their head, making them feel othered for having unique hair. Now, to that person, if that was the first time they've ever heard that comment, they might be able to let it go. But Reverend Cooley tells us in her article that most people with marginalized identities get this over and over and over and over. We've probably all been the recipients of microaggressions in our lives in one way or another. Probably all of us have said them. But when you hear them over and over again, they start to have more power, and they don't feel micro anymore. They become that overly sensitive bruise. The intent behind the statement is good, but the impact can feel really painful. And while the golden rule puts the emphasis on the intent, the platinum rule puts the emphasis on the impact. How do we know what someone feels or wants or needs? Well, for one thing, we can ask them. And if we find out that what they want or need, either by asking or by deducing through their body language, if you give someone a compliment and they go, right, that's probably a clue that they didn't take it as a compliment. Then we can do our best to give them what they want or need, even if it's not something that comes easily to us. We can just try. Sometimes, if we're really, really lucky, this person will tell us when we miss the mark. Reverend Cooley suggests what I've seen UU youth groups do in their group covenants. They use the words ouch or oops. If someone says something hurtful in the group, even unintentionally, someone else might say, ouch, the way you said that hurt. The response from the person who made the mistake is then, oops, that wasn't my intention. How can I do better? So I said, if we're really lucky, the person will tell us when we miss the mark. We often don't feel that way when someone tells us we miss the mark, right? We feel defensive or angry. How dare you tell me I wasn't right in that moment? But I think a reframe is seeing it as a gift. Wow. Thank you so much for telling me something I didn't know. Ouch and oops are great shorthand for staying in right relationship, especially in settings like these, fellowship settings, groups, where we understand that that's the ground rules, where we use the words ouch or oops. But the spirit of ouch and oops can be carried out into the real world. Now, I don't necessarily recommend you say to a stranger, like, ouch, when they say something to you. They won't get what you mean. But you can sort of carry that spirit with you. If someone either verbally or through their body language tells you that you did something that made them feel bad, it's helpful to own it. Oh, wow, I really didn't mean to hurt your feelings like that. The next step is humility and curiosity rather than defensiveness, which is often our go-to action. I know certainly it's mine. The Quaker teacher Parker Palmer has a practice called Circles of Trust, and one of the ground rules in Circles of Trust is when the going gets tough, turn to curiosity. I love that. Turn to curiosity. It feels vulnerable and painful to know that we aren't always living up to our own expectations of ourselves, but defensiveness just continues the ouch. Why do you have to be so sensitive? You know I didn't mean it like that. That's just another poke on that bruise that is struggling to heal. Instead, curiosity, why am I feeling this way? Why does this feel so bad? How can I fix my impact? That's a good strategy. Ask the other person, after you apologize, how you can do better. Here's one suggestion for how to say that. I'm really sorry I said that in a clumsy way. I think I might have hurt your feelings. What can I do to do better in the future? Or, you're right, I didn't mean that to be as hurtful, but it sounds like it was. I'm sorry, I care about you. What can I do to make it up to you? Recognizing that in every human relationship, almost every human interaction, we're going to make mistakes. It can free us from the illusion of our own perfection. Even if our intent is good, even if we are diligently following the golden rule, sometimes it's just not going to land the way we want for the other person because, well, people are different. And that's fine. It's not all about us, right? It's okay if we make a mistake. If we want to do better, if we want to follow the platinum rule and offer people what they need, what they want, then we need to listen, ask, observe, and then honor what they offer us, even if what they need is different from what we might want. And this takes practice. It just does. But what an amazing chance to learn and to grow. As Unitarian Universalists, we are called to continue our growth in mind and spirit. That's what we say we do here at the Fellowship, grow in mind and spirit. And so if that is our goal, then we shouldn't shy away from the challenge of learning new things, even if they're hard new things. The Platinum Rule helps us to remember to center the experiences of other people, and in particular, to center the experiences of other people if our own social location grants us more privilege. So if we are white or identify as male or cisgender or straight or able-bodied, middle class, educated, Christian, these are all in our society different identities that have privilege or any combination of these identities. I, for one, hold almost all of those identities. We need to practice, if we have those identities, we need to practice even harder because our society hasn't required us to learn this skill very much. We haven't as many chances to practice centering other people's experiences. The definition of privilege is that society centers our experience. So we just don't have to practice it so much. Privilege doesn't mean that your life isn't hard. It does not mean that. Privilege means that your life isn't hard because of the identities you carry. The golden rule for those of us with privilege feels like such a perfect rule. Do unto others the way you want to be done unto. It feels so perfect because, of course, what I want is normative. Of course, what I want is what everyone wants. But, of course, we know that that's not really true. And so holding the platinum rule in our hearts, striving to treat others not the way I want to be treated, but the way you want to be treated, is a very good place to start if we fully want to live out our first Unitarian Universalist principle of honoring and treating every person with inherent worth and dignity. May it be so. Amen.